Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome back to Defrag. All right, Gov. So, first of all, we're going to be out next week. I'm going to be on vacation. You are heads down on something that begins with W and ends with 8?
Yeah. There's this, you know, this little project that...
Little something going on over in your building over there.
A little project that we've been working on for a little while.
All right, well, we'll let you work on that, and we'll talk more about that on Peak of the Week. So let's get started here. Last night, we got a question from David Nichols, who asked, when running a Windows search on my system, it does not find all the files that I know it should. Here is an example of what happens on my system. I have 4 files with names first, space, second, first dash second, first underscore second, and first second one word dot text. My system will only find 3 of the 4 when I do a search for second, and when I search for first, it will find all 4. I have looked through the help system and cannot seem to find any reason why it would only find 3 of the 4 when searching the word second, and there's no separator in the file name. So we made a little test here, and I added to the test a 5th file called second first. And so we know there's 5 files here.
Yep.
And all 5 have the word second in them.
Right.
So we'll do a search, and there's only 4 files.
There's only 4 files.
So let's talk a little bit about what exactly is going on here.
So, you know, for the general use case for using search, people tend to use whole words, and whole words tend to be, you know, separated by what we call word breakers.
Yeah.
Could be a dash, an underscore, a space, you know, certain delimiters in order to make the searching a lot faster, right? Because if it had to actually search every possible combination in large words, then you're trying to do substring searches, which makes it significantly more expensive.
Yeah.
So for the general use case, the 90% use case, it's a lot simpler just to say, you know, I'm going to start searching from the beginning, and in this case, it found second first.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is still a word breaker.
The second was the beginning of the word.
It was the beginning of the word, and that is a word breaker, right?
Yeah.
The having nothing in front of it is still technically a break.
Mm-hmm.
So it was able to find that entire word.
And the one that it didn't find was first, second, all as one word.
Right. Now, if you knew that you had some words that we were looking for that were part of a larger string, what you could do in that particular case is override the default search parameters and use star in front of it.
And
so,
here we have all 5.
And now we have all 5 of them.
So this was interesting last night, and I had to kind of wrap my mind around it because I never really thought about this before, but this is a good practice if you're doing a search and you think you have the file there and it's not coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Use the asterisks before it. So, yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, conversely, if you did a search for TSE, that would have been in the first, second, all as one word, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't find that because that's not, you know, a standalone word.
Right.
So, yeah, good practice for doing a search. So
now,
keep that in mind.
If we wanted to do TSE star, what would we get? We would get just the one word that we found that has it all together with no word break.
And just star TSE found it, too, when
yeah.
you started typing that in. So interesting. Very cool. All right. Excellent. Next question from Johntown. It says, here's a problem that I've had 4 or 5 times. I need to rush out and take my laptop with me. We've all been there. When I go to shut down Windows and I find out it needs to apply a whole pile of updates prior to powering off, I end up waiting as long as I can, then undock the laptop, throw out my bag, power it up, and head out. Sometimes the update's complete and the machine powers down properly. Other times it hangs. I need to fix things later. Is there a way to get Windows Update to apply the updates when they download, or at least let me know when the updates are waiting to install, so I can do it prior to shutdown?
So if we go to the control panel, and actually if you notice my start menu right now, there's a little shield next to the shutdown, which
yeah.
is telling me I have updates that need to be installed.
Yeah.
And it's
going
to do it when I do a shutdown. But we'll go to the Windows Update portion first. And change settings. So you can install automatically, you can download and then choose, check for updates, but let me choose when to download and install them. never check for updates. We obviously don't want to recommend that one.
Yeah.
Now, install updates automatically, which is recommended. What that'll do is, yes, it will install, but Windows doesn't want to necessarily install the updates while you're using the machine, which is mm-hmm. why we have something called a maintenance hour, which is generally set for 3 o'clock in the morning,
yeah,
where the updates will actually install at that point.
That's when I'm at my finest, though. So,
and yes, you can change that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you can change if you want to do it on a weekly basis or every day basis.
Every Sunday morning.
Right.
Wake up, my machine's ready to go.
It was actually kind of interesting, this particular question, where he was really asking, or he was saying his situation was, I'm shutting down my machine as I'm walking away.
Yeah.
Now, because of this particular affordance where we're telling the user, okay, when you shut down, we're going to start applying updates.
Yeah.
Not so great on a laptop, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're trying to get out the door and you're waiting for updates, which, you know, could potentially take a while depending on
yeah.
how many that you have running.
Yeah.
I actually don't ever shut down my laptop, especially when updates are ready to go when I'm trying to leave.
Yeah, if you're in a hurry.
Yeah, so
not the time to do it.
Don't shut down, choose hibernate.
Okay.
And that's going to be the same effect. It's not going to be sleep, which will, you know, leave some power running and your fans might actually start up. But if you have hibernate turned on and you hibernate your machine, it's as if it was off and it's going to go off right away and it won't wake back up again unless you have, you know, particular wake timers, which is generally disabled for laptops.
Yeah.
So that is actually what I'd recommend doing, because then you do have the choice of when to apply your updates, and you don't have to wait for it to do it at an inopportune time.
Yeah.
You can do it when you feel ready to do it.
So if you got a Bang Shield, hibernate. If you don't have a Bang Shield, you're going to shut down quickly. No
yeah.
problem. There you go. Good one. All right, from Pedro, big fan of the show, really like the advice you give. That's why we should have had you first. Is it possible to have a different background image for each monitor without third-party tools or graphic card managers? Is this built into Windows? I currently use a free tool called Display Fusion. So, yeah.
Yep, actually totally possible to do. It's kind of a hack, but totally supported hack. What you do is you create one large picture with each individual screen the way that you want it. So if you have three monitors, right, you create one large picture where each particular picture would cover each particular screen all
yeah.
in one image. And then you set the personalization setting. Now, obviously, I don't have multi-monitor here, but if you go to personalize and you go to the desktop background, don't choose fill, choose tile.
Okay. And if you have different monitors, they're probably going to be different resolutions. So
really?
Well, mine are, because
really?
I've got high res here and a little monitor on my desk and high res here, but higher res at home.
You could get rather creative in your
so
picture.
You give me, I'm do some math in Photoshop.
Yes, you could do some math in Photoshop. You reset your canvas size to be, you know, the largest possible.
Yeah.
And then actually set your picture size within that canvas. Tile them on the canvas,
okay,
and then you could actually make them fit. I've done it before. I don't tend to run different resolutions on monitors,
yeah, yeah.
So I don't do this often,
okay.
But on my Quadmon back at the office,
oh yeah, yeah, the
nice,
Quadmon,
nice panoramic photo.
Yeah, he's in the Matrix here. Okay, so there is a way to do that then.
Absolutely.
So. Excellent. All right, next question. So this is one that I'm troubleshooting at home, and so I asked some advice. We're just going to talk about it here. Internet Explorer on my daughter's laptop.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, she goes to play Webkinz, mm-hmm. and she's like, it's not working, I'm clicking. And in Internet Explorer, you can click a link.
Mm-hmm.
It highlights a link. It turns it colors like you're clicking it, but it mm-hmm. doesn't actually do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And to actually click that link, you have to right-click and then choose Open.
Mm-hmm.
I did a search, and you know I've seen this one before, too, and some other searches turned up that other people have seen this as well. So I know that you know my daughter and I aren't crazy, that this has actually happened. And what's your advice on this? How do I troubleshoot this?
Start IE with no add-ons.
Okay.
So we actually have a start menu link for this that is wonderfully buried for some strange reason. You go to all programs, you go to accessories, because this makes so much sense.
Yeah.
You go to system tools. Again, so much sense. Internet Explorer, no add-ons.
Okay. Or I could just type
or
internet
just, yeah.
and find it. Okay, well, I'll try that tonight, and we'll see how that works. Excellent.
You know, the other thing that you can do is if you... That will load up IE with completely no add-ons.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might be missing some stuff, but obviously you can go check, manage add-ons.
And
see what things you have running.
I tend to go in here and disable a lot of this, so it could be that you know, something's in there now. But yeah, I'll give that another shot, and we'll see how
and
that works.
And one of our favorite things to do, you know, if all else fails, Internet Explorer options, advanced, restore advanced settings, and reset.
Okay, cool. All right, try it tonight. All right, next question. In Windows Power Options, you can choose what you want to do when a user presses the power button. On Windows XP, one of the options was Ask Me What to Do. Since Windows Vista, this option's not available anymore. Is there any magic registry key to restore this feature?
Nope.
Nope. No way to ask anymore.
No way.
You can set what you want it to do,
yes,
but you can't make it ask you what
right.
you want it to do anymore.
Yeah, so if you go to the Power Options, you know, choose what the power button does.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a ask me what to do anymore.
Yeah.
You can just do it.
Why don't you just tell me what you want it to do? Yeah. So you could just set it in here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next question. I'm tired of programs that constantly prompt me to reboot, including Windows automatic updates. So I wonder if anyone knows how to disable the API boot call on Windows. Basically, I want Windows to do absolutely nothing when a program attempts to reboot it.
So this particular person wants to run his system in the most insecure and most unknown state possible.
Yeah, so let's run in a state that's not replicable in a way that's, yeah, it's wobbly.
It's very wobbly. There's a particular reason why, you know, Windows needs a reboot. It means that there is something that has replaced a file or is needing to replace a file that's in use currently by one of the processes.
Yeah.
And that particular process can't actually shut down safely without taking out the entire machine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there are certain processes that you can obviously shut down and restart. A lot of services, basic user mode processes, they can shut down and restart without an issue.
Yeah.
There are certain system critical processes that you cannot actually shut down and restart. It needs to go through a full reboot cycle.
Yeah.
We've made, obviously, a lot of progress over the years so that we reduce that. We don't like to reboot either, right? It's not fun to reboot, especially for servers. But
so let me ask you something about this, because I had a machine that I flattened the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like a lot of, an HP machine, there was a lot of updates. I mean, a ton of updates. There are driver updates and all kinds of little things I was installing. And I don't want to reboot every single time it asks me to reboot.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it that I reboot after I install, like, you know, the mouse driver? And then it says, hey, reboot. But I'm like, you know, I'm going to do the network driver first, and then I'll reboot. Or do two or three or four before I reboot. How critical is it that I do a reboot after installing any one of those?
There's no hard and fast rule on it. The real issue is that for a lot of the driver packages, when they install, there's some post-install action that they have to take.
Yeah.
And they can't do it until after a reboot.
Yeah.
So every time you defer a reboot and you install something else, there's a log of things that is supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you're rebooting the machine and there are files that are going to be replaced, we have it in a particular section of the registry and other places as well that are directives. On reboot, you know, when the machine is up to a certain point, we can start replacing files before they actually become in use again. And you know, we kind of go into this weird endless cycle. Now, the problem occurs is if you install one package and it's asking for a reboot and it's replaced some files.
Yeah.
You install another package and it wants to replace and update other files, and they happen to mesh.
Yeah.
Right? They're the same files. So they're a shared component. We have a lot of shared components for various different packages.
Yeah. Some of the things, when you download them, they're called shared components. So.
Right. So the part that you, where you get into a mess or a potential mess, is if you had package A that depended on a particular version, and then you install package B without a reboot, and it is now going to whack the file that it was trying to replace in the first place.
Yeah.
You now have a mismatch of versions that could make your system unstable. So, yes, it is an absolute pain to reboot after each and every one of those,
mm-hmm.
but it is also the safest thing to do.
Yeah. So I can do it, I can roll the dice, but I know I'm asking for trouble if I do it. I could potentially be asking
for
trouble.
There is the potential for asking for trouble. Generally, what we would recommend is when you flatten a machine, to let Windows do all of its updates first. So Windows Update, when it's installing its drivers through Windows Update, knows how to stack everything to minimize reboots. So what you want to do is install it, let Windows Update do everything that it needs to do, go through however many reboots that are required for that. Then go look at Device Manager and see if you have anything banged out. Don't necessarily try to replace things that don't need a driver, right? Like, and a lot of people want to replace their vid driver, their sound driver, yada, yada, yada. Only ever really replace them if you absolutely have to.
So, like, you don't have to go to the manufacturer and download the SD card reader for the laptop.
If Windows has... if it works, leave it alone.
See, I always wonder, maybe I get a little bit faster if I got the latest driver from the manufacturer.
Depends on when you do everything, though, right? So if you have a system, say it was designed for Vista, and then you install Windows 7 on it, the manufacturer is highly likely to not have a later driver. You know, it may not even have a Windows 7 driver for it. But if Windows itself installs its own driver, it is highly likely to be actually an updated driver versus the one that's on the OEM site. I would tend to say, you know, look at what the system gives you by default because it has been well tested in that configuration. And only when you absolutely need to, go and selectively pick which drivers that you want to lay over top. Because, you know, you might actually have some issues with the built-in, with whatever Windows offers you. It might be an older one. There might be a newer one up on the OEM site. But do it in a way that's a little bit more thoughtful. Do it, you know, pick the ones that you really need to do it for. Wait a while after doing each one to make sure that you're not going to destabilize the system.
Because
I know a lot of folks will just throw on every last driver all in one shot, and then their system becomes wonky, and they don't know, well, which one did, which one caused it.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. I have tables in AccessDB, Office 2007, which have confidential and sensitive data which needs to be removed. The remainder of the database needs to remain functional. How do I safely remove the classified data? Does MS Access store data outside of the MDB file?
It doesn't store anything outside of it, you know, as by design. The information might exist in the page file or in memory or in a temp file somewhere, but the database file itself, you know, when you delete it, it's going to be gone. The other thing that you can do with the database file is run a compact, not utility, but there's something in Access that you can choose, compact the database. So what it'll do is it'll look for all the deleted information and then re-index the database so that it will make it more efficient, and in doing so, it will overwrite the spots on the file that the deleted information existed in. So you have a higher probability of not ever being able to access that deleted information again. About the most secure thing you can do.
Okay. All right, next question. I have config files set to open in Notepad++. The files I edit are typically in protected locations, like program files, etc., thus requiring administrator access. I'd like to be able to double-click on a config file and have Notepad open with administrator privileges. It's fine if the UAC prompt comes up. Is there a way to do that?
Absolutely. We don't recommend it, but, hey, we we designed the OS.
You can do what you like.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that I will tell you, you know, we really, really don't want you to do it. This particular case, you know, it's not usually that big a deal. The issue tends to come up when applications that were truly designed to not run elevated, they may have never tested in that configuration, so some things could go, you know, kind of wonky. There's two different approaches for this. You could either change the ACL on the config file itself that you're trying to open so that you have explicit rights to it. In which case, Notepad++ or whatever program that you're trying to use to edit it doesn't need to run elevated at all. You have direct rights to modify it. The other option is, of course, setting Notepad++ to always elevate. Now, I don't actually have that installed, but I can replicate it with Foxit. So just go to your program files folder, right-click on the .exe, go to properties, go to the compatibility tab, and just say, run this program as an administrator.
Okay.
And I have a PDF. So if I click on this, boom, Fox it now, prompts to run elevated.
Nice, okay.
And there you go. So now this is running elevated. I can edit the file. You know, if this was in program files, it wouldn't give me any problems editing it or saving it.
Cool. All right, and I'm very interested in security strategy, gov.ppx, tx. That's it's like an awesome one to just open up right here on camera. All right, next question. All right, my favorites in IE8 seem to have a lot of duplicate links. Is there a simple tool available which allows me to run my favorites folder through it to find duplicates? It'd be nice if the tool showed a list of possible duplicates before deleting any links. So, yeah, there's an app that you can use for this. It's called AM Deadlink.
Yep.
So just link to it here. It's a free app. Go ahead and download it, and you can install it. It works with IE, Firefox, Opera, Chrome. And this will tell you if you've got duplicates. So simple, but not much to go through here. You just run this, and it'll do what you're looking for, and it's freeware.
Note, I have never run this application, so I can't say one way or the other.
Note, I did it the other night.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're all right. So, yeah, that's a simple way to do that. Next question, and actually this was an interesting one. So my wife was going to upload an image to imageur.com,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to remove any of the EXIF data that was on the image, like, you know, GPS coordinates and stuff like that, before you just stick it out there. And it's a good practice to do that. And so I sent myself a note. I was like, oh, I'm going to ask this on Defrag. So, you know, anyone who was doing the same thing mm-hmm. would want to do that. And then I saw the Long Zen post about he found EXIF data in an image, and so this has nothing to do with that. But if you did want to remove the metadata from an image before you upload it someplace, what's the process for doing that?
It is.
And it's very simple.
It is very, very simple. So I have some pictures here. If I go to look at it under details, this is where you can see some of your data. You know, I stuck a date taken here.
And so there might be a bunch of stuff in here, like, you know, what kind of
camera that
phone
you have.
Or camera you're yep. using. GPS coordinates could be in here if
yep.
you took this with your phone. And, you know, maybe something that identifies yourself, like, you know, author or something like that, if you're using an app that adds that kind of stuff. So you just click the link, and it'll remove the personal information from it.
Yeah, and if you select, you know, multiples at the same time, you can also do that, remove properties and personal information. And you can pick and choose, you know, create a copy with it, or just remove everything, you know, remove whatever it is that you want to remove from it, which is actually pretty cool. You know, let's just say
yeah.
I want to remove the date taken, boom, nice, simple, very fast, and you don't have to worry about, you know, personal information, so the date taken is now gone.
Very cool.
Now you can upload to your heart's content.
Yeah.
Although I personally don't tend to ever want to upload pictures to the internet.
Yeah.
It's the extension to the you know, there's only two things in life that are guaranteed: death and taxes. And
yeah.
Now the third one is if you upload a picture to the internet, it's never coming off.
Yeah. It's there forever.
It is there forever and
you
ever.
You cannot
and ever.
Unring that bell.
Nope.
All right, so now we're up to pick of the week. Pick of the week. And this week, our pick of the week, because this will be happening before we get back and do another show,
mm-hmm.
the Windows 8 consumer preview.
Consumer preview, yep. So, you know, beta.
Yeah, so this is going to be on February 29th, and you'll be able to download it, and we're not going to, you know, throw out a link or anything like that.
No, we don't have a link yet.
When the time comes, you will know.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will know where you go to download this. You can go ahead and install it. And, yeah, let us know what you think. Leave a note in the show
install
comments.
Install it. Get Visual Studio Express. Start creating some Metro-style apps. You know, start porting over some of your, you know, Windows Phone apps or other apps in general. Whatever you like, start porting them over to Windows 8, and you know, see how they work. Tell us, give us feedback, and you know, what doesn't work, what could be better. Well, all, you know, I'm sure lots of you have opinions on what could be better.
Yeah, yeah, everyone does. And and we'll be talking about this sometime in the near future about if you have any issues or anything that you want to know more about. or conflicts or whatever the problem is, just let us know and we'll get through those too.
Yeah, and check out Stephen Sanofsky's blog on building Windows 8.
Yeah.
You know, you can get some really in-depth knowledge of some of the new features that are going into it.
Excellent. And that's the show for this week. If you want to email us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave a comment in the show notes, but we like the email because we can go back and forth with you in the middle of the night. That'll be you. All right. See you next time.